But then it's followed by sedation.
Even though doctors and police say they haven't seen any local cases of people who have taken Jankum, they say they do see quite a few young adult males at the emergency room who have taken hallucinogens. They say depending on what they've taken, the symptoms can vary.
Lowering your blood pressure, lowering your heart rate, lowering your respiratory drive, so that you stop breathing.
Jankum can do all that. And the long-term effects are worse. They include brain damage, stroke-like symptoms, even destroying bone marrow to the point of developing leukemia. All that from getting high off human feces and urine.
That's the very question that we have, and it is. Why you would ingest something into your system that's that nasty? You know, you'd have to ask those folks that are doing it.
Do something stupid at age 18 and then pay for it the rest of your life.
Now, some signs a person might be taking hallucinogens like Jankum, if they're acting nervous, if they're jittery, experiencing tremors, or have dilated pupils. A lot of times, you can also smell it on their breath since it's something they're breathing in.
Boy, it's just amazing. Somebody would want to do this to themselves. What should parents, Kelly, be doing to keep their kids away from this stuff?
Well, police say it's really all about parents having a positive relationship with their kids, knowing where they are, what they're doing. And it can sound extreme, but they say also, don't let your kids go to bed when they come home at night until you've smelled their breath and until you've had a conversation with them. Again, sounds extreme, but it could end up saving a life.
Yeah, look for things that are out of the norm. All right. Thank you, Kelly.
Mm-hmm.
Parents need to be aware that kids are calling it by the more popular slang term, butt hash.
There we go. And that was me. I forgot to turn off the suck button there. Right at the top. All right. Let me just recreate those gripping opening moments there for those who may have missed them. I'm gonna skip right to the money line here. So this is not us actually beginning the show again as such. I'm just gonna recreate just really the what you really care about here.
Attention broadcasters in the greater Portland area. Your daily show prep begins now.
And then we'll just do the...
Parents need to be aware that kids are calling it by the more popular slang term, butt hash.
There we go. Fantastic. And indeedly right. Hello, how are you today? Thank you for hipping me to that, or hepping me to that, as the kids say, Don Taylor.
That's part of what I'm here for.
So if you just heard the little warbliness, or it was going in, or, you know, or jibbity-jibbity rat-a-tat-tat at the beginning, at the top of the show, what that was is, that's that thing that I was doing, like the first day or two we were here. There's that whole button that says, click this to stop sounding terrible. And I just didn't realize I was supposed to do that. And so I went and I turned it off. And this is what I get for being... This is for hubris. This is what I get for being arrogant about Mac versus Windows. Because, the thing about Windows is... I mean, you see this happen to me all the time because I'll edit stuff on a Windows-based operating system sometimes. And you will see me where I'm trying to get it to close and it just won't close and the Control-Alt-Delete doesn't work. And you just got to go over and you got to, unplug the computer and throw it out a window into a container of peat moss and let it sit for 2 years before the operating system will run properly. So just now, as we were starting the show, I had this other program running in the background on our streaming server, and I went to close it, and the Mac did that Windows thing of claiming that it was closed. It was not, in fact, closed. And I had to do the Mac equivalent of the Control-Alt-Delete, which is the force quit. So there you go. All right.
Can we set it up in some way that there's just, a big red button that you push?
There isn't. Look at that. What is that right there?
There you go.
That's a big red button.
Yeah.
You know what I didn't do?
Didn't push the button?
Didn't push the button.
Yeah.
But for that one pesky detail there, but for the grace of a button, go I. Good afternoon to you. It is 20 minutes after the hour of 1, and this the month of July, the year of our Lord 2010. Thank you for coming by, making a part of your listening day. We are live from the plushly appointed yet not overly ostentatious studios of the Emerson News Network, looming high above the milkpacking district in beautiful southeast Portland, Oregon. Thank you for coming along and gathering near the wireless today that ye might be amused. You and your family, gather them all around this broadcasting device, won't you? So that they may learn, and learn mirth at that. If you would like to join us via the telephone today, it is, 503-505-6964. 503-505-6964. You can also email if you like. It is rick@rickemerson.com. rick@rickemerson.com. Or you can chat online with us. It is rickemerson.com. You go to rickemerson.com. You go to the Rick Emerson Show section. There's a little chat box there. Again, or you can do it via the email at rick@rickemerson.com or the telephone at 503-505-6964. One random on-air caller today will win an autographed copy of On Thin Ice by Hugh Rowland. He of Ice Road Truckers fame. So Ice Road Truckers star Hugh Rowland wrote this book called On Thin Ice, which is actually fantastic. And it, more than anything else, it makes me realize what a colossal pussy I am. In that, really, I have to sit in an office and I have to speak into a microphone, and my whole day can go asunder if I don't, you know, if I don't remember to press like a button correctly. So this will.
You interviewed this fellow.
I did.
Now these trucks that they drive are massive.
They're 180,000 pounds.
So they are therefore not indeed driving on thin ice.
Well, it's all relative, I suppose. They're not driving on thin ice, like, intentionally. They're not going out of their way to drive on thin ice. They're not waking up in the morning and say, let me see if I can find a sheet of frozen water that will be insufficient to support the weight of this, and then into the water.
See, I assume they are indeed actually looking deliberately for thick ice.
Yes. Well, that's, I think, if all goes according to Hoyle, as they say, they're driving on thick ice. He does, the thing about that show is, I mean, I don't know how real it is. I know that in the first season, there were a couple scenes, we've talked about this before, where the truckers themselves, they got all pissed off because there were a few scenes that had been sort of jerry-rigged or fabricated, or they'd been, the whatever had been amped up by the producers of the show. And they said, well, you know, you got to not do that. You got to keep everything sort of legitimate. But there's this sequence where Hugh Rowland is driving along, and he's driving at night across this frozen riverbed where there is, as you know, rather thick ice, ice that is thick enough to support the weight of his truck. And he's driving along with the heater going full blast. The heater has to be full blast because the windows are rolled down. The windows have got to be rolled down because he's got to be able to hear if the ice actually starts to break underneath his truck while he's driving across, you know, a river in, like, Alaska. And when the ice breaks, and not just cracking, because he said it actually has to crack a little bit, otherwise it would just snap entirely, like how skyscrapers blow 3 feet side to side during a strong wind, because otherwise they would just snap off. He said that when the ice snaps entirely, when it actually does start to just all go wrong and the huge holes appear in the ice, that it actually is so loud it's like a thunderclap outside the truck. Just completely unnerving.
I hope those fellows are paid very well.
They are. They are paid incredibly well. You know what they're paid like? They're paid like Alaskan fishermen. You know why? Because the odds of dying are like 1 in 5 or something. Yeah. I have a friend of mine. He's the only guy I ever knew who actually did the Alaskan fishing thing. And he himself, he returned safe and sound. But the guy who worked next to him, the guy who worked on the sort of, you know, the processing line next to him every single day, came home alive. One sleeve too many. Came home missing an arm. The guy, but you know, they pay you so goddamn much money, though. The guy had a pretty good sense of humor about it. He goes, well, as long as I can still sign checks. And, like, that was, you know, as while slinging down another Meisterbrow.
Right. I knew a couple of people I went to culinary school with who went up to actually cook in, like, fishing shacks, you know, and cook for guys on the pipeline and stuff in Alaska. And the money was very, very good for people, even if you just go up there to cook, because it's just, you know, you're stuck there and there's nowhere to go.
Right.
And as long as you don't spend all of your money on, like, porn and whiskey to make it through the winter.
Whores and cocaine.
Yeah.
Then you're going to be fine. It is the Rick Emerson Radio Program. Thank you for joining us. It is Thursday. It is the first day of July. Coming up today, we have a Corpse Watch on the way, Geek Watch on the way. Ryan White, music editor from The Oregonian, will join us. He's going to talk about the 65-year-old musician he most wishes to be like when he is that age. And apparently Justin Bieber is coming to town, which I didn't know. I wasn't privy to that information. Nobody told me.
We're not on the Bieber list,
the Beeb,
apparently.
Yes. The Beeb will be here. I thought that I had people that kept me apprised of such cultural happenings, but apparently
not. And when he comes
to
town, you know what this town will be full of? Bieber fever.
Is that what they call it? Do they really call it Bieber fever? Is that a thing you're trying to
Bieber
start?
Bieber fever.
Okay. and so forth. We have another installment of Pop Culture Authority. Today's Pop Culture Authority answers the magical burning question, why does G.I. Joe have a scar? We have the top five worst teen idol songs, the five worst teen idol songs ever recorded, and a wholly separate song, which Dawn Taylor believes to be the worst song ever released in a commercial sense
now,
in the history of mankind.
And I must clarify, I believe it's actually the worst song to ever be, like, a hit song, a top ten song. There are worse songs that have been released.
It's not like something you'd have to go to like a dollar store and you root around in the back and you find it behind some Lawrence Welk records. I mean, this is a known song that you believe to be the worst thing ever released.
Yes, actually be a hit.
All right, so we will get to all of that coming up later on today. It is 503-505-6964. And I don't even know what the rest of this is about. I just wrote down the phrase Zorro. Oh, I know what that's about. I have to apologize. There was a guy, you know, we do a little speech or a movie clip or whatever at the top of the program. Today, it got all garbled up because I leaned on the keyboard at the wrong moment. But we were playing the Jenkum thing where they were talking about the, you know, smell your kid's breath before they go to sleep so they're not on the butt hash. That is in the stead of the trailer for The Erotic Adventures of Zorro, which a listener requested. He said, please open Thursday's show with The Erotic Adventures of Zorro clip. And here's the thing. I managed to find almost everything. One of the discs that has gone missing, though, and has not yet come back into my possession, is a disc that has all of my sort of compiled movie speeches, movie clips, movie sound bites, sequences from films, including the Erotic Adventures of Zorro trailer, which is, as you might assess from this, it is a four-minute preview for a porn film that they made back in the Jack Horner days of, like, 1970, where it is Zorro, except that he gives everybody a good shtupping. And it's just, it's awesome.
Does he use his penis to cut the Z?
Don't be crass about Zorro. He uses a sword. He's the gay blade, or the straight blade, is the case, or the whatever comes across his penile transom blade, is the case maybe. It does contain the great phrase, "Kids, have your parents take you to see the Erotic Adventures of Zorro." So I'm going to try to dig that up so we can play for tomorrow. I have no idea where it went to, but I'm going to find it. That's the last thing I do. That's what I'm going to be doing tonight. What Dawn Taylor was doing last night apparently had something to do with a shotgun, and I don't really know why or to what end you were dealing with a shotgun. All I know is that when I came in, you were muttering on the phone to your husband about it, something, 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 the shotgun, something, something, assemble it, something, something, the shotgun. That's it. That's all I know.
Yes. I came home and my husband, at first I thought he was sitting on the couch in his underwear assembling a shotgun, but he was actually just wearing a pair of shorts. But he doesn't wear shorts very often. So the fact that he was sitting on the couch and I could see his legs, my first thought was like, he's doing something with mechanical things and wearing underpants, which did not seem like him at all.
Is your husband the kind to see? Look, I don't mean to embarrass him, Patrick, if you're listening. This is around the time that you will learn something that I tell everybody who works on the show, which is that significant others should not listen to the show. And if you do listen, you shouldn't mention to your beloved that you do. Just pretend that you don't ever hear any of the things we're saying, because at some point it's going to be something horrible or otherwise embarrassing or ridiculous or awkward. And then there's just going to be what Scotty J's wife termed the pillow wall. And no one wants the pillow wall. Does Patrick sit around in his underwear a lot? You can be honest.
No, he never does. That's why when I saw like white legs and knees, and
the whitest of legs,
then I thought, he's sitting there in his underwear. Why isn't he wearing pants?
Hang on now. And I mean,
and when you come home, and as a woman, when you come home, even if you are expected home at a certain time, and you come home and your spouse is just sitting on the couch and they seem to be naked from the waist down, and you're just like, oh, did I just walk in on something I should not be seeing?
Hey, honey, I was just slathering myself with Jergens. You want to hand me the remote?
But then I saw he like had a shotgun in his lap, so that was even better.
Well, at least it's not porn. At least it's only weaponry.
Yeah, he had this this Mossberg pump action shotgun that for some reason had been completely disassembled, and it was just all the parts were in this like 1970s era avocado green wastebasket that was and he had pulled it out of the garage and he was sitting there. He decided he wanted to sell it, but he could only sell it to the gun broker if it was actually a shotgun and not just a collection of parts. So he was sitting on the couch with a manual and all of these pieces trying to put the shotgun back together.
Okay, first of all, this is great in like so many ways I can't even begin to quantify them all. Let's have no illusions about one fact right now, that you have turned on about 89% of the guys and not a few women in the audience by identifying it as not just a shotgun, but a Mossberg pump-action shotgun. Whose shotgun is it? It's his, presumably?
It is his shotgun.
Why was the shotgun in pieces? Was it for safety reasons, so it couldn't be used?
I have no idea.
Or was he trying to improve it at one point in his life? Like, was he trying to saw it off so he could sell it to white supremacists and it all just, like, he pulled the wrong button and it just fell into pieces?
I'll be honest, I never asked. Okay. I have no idea. I know that at one time we did have a rifle that was missing a stock because it needed a new stock and he was going to put it. But I have no idea why the shotgun was in pieces.
All right.
But the thing is, he had this little manual and it was just the little booklet that comes, I guess, with the shotgun.
I'm impressed that he still had the manual that came with the gun. I don't have I know the manual that came with my car, and that, you know, that cost me $25,000.
But yeah, and he couldn't figure out how to put it back together. So he ended up, and this was pretty ingenious, he actually went on YouTube and found a YouTube video where someone shows you how to assemble a shotgun.
That is fantastic. And the thing is, and you know, as you said it, it all came into perspective just so clearly, because that's the sort of thing that you wouldn't necessarily think of, you know, being on YouTube. But as soon as you mentioned it, I thought, well, of course, there's got to be a guide to how to do everything on there, up to and including how to put together a firearm out of spare pieces you might find, like, in your abode. So who's he selling it? There's some guy at a gun store?
Pretty much, yeah. I think there's two or three locations of this one particular chain called The Gun Broker, which is a, you know, pretty obvious name.
Yeah.
But yeah, and that's one of those things that's kind of odd to me, because they tend to be located... We went to this one, and it's in...
right next to a pawn shop?
Tigered thing. No, it's like in a strip mall, like right next to, like, you know, a family restaurant and a sports bar. And the thing is, so it's kind of odd to see somebody, like, get out of their car and walk into a store in a strip mall holding a shotgun. You know, and I guess... And the thing is, I guess you'd have to ask him about this. I guess there's, like, this whole etiquette about, like, the way you hold the gun so that it's in a completely non-threatening manner when
pointing
you walk
it at the face
when
wrong.
You walk into the gun store,
yeah.
You know.
Well, because I think that's the sort of thing that could easily be misconstrued, let's say. You know, if you walk in and go, I need something from you, and meanwhile you're pointing a 12-gauge at a guy's neck, I think that's going to be... you're probably not going to be conveying the message you wish to convey at that point.
He also had a huge cardboard box full of, like, hundreds and hundreds of rounds of ammunition.
This is awesome.
So,
you should have filmed this.
Oh, no, and I actually don't think it was the ammo. It was magazines. He had, like, five... He had a bunch of ammo he didn't need, and he had, like, five magazines. And so he took those to the gun store.
You guys,
just...
really... Was he able to sell it all?
Yeah.
You guys should have taken, like, a whole bunch of photographs, though, like Bonnie and Clyde-style pictures, before he got rid of it. I'm just saying, if you had taken a series of photographs, perhaps for our website or perhaps your Facebook page, of you in some come-hither, expression on your face, you know, maybe smoking a cigarette, wearing a beret, and then just, you know, like licking the side of a shotgun or something.
Well, on our first date, the first time we got together, you know, after we had met, and then I went to his home, and... I asked him flat out if there was anything, you know, weird about him that I should know. Because I had reached this point in dating where it's like, let's not beat around the bush. What's wrong with you?
Seriously. Why are you single?
Yeah. And he said, no, nothing. And he said, I do have a lot of guns. And, you know, because I guess with some people that could be a deal breaker. And I was like, well, what do you mean by a lot? And he said, let me show you. And we went upstairs and we went into his walk-in closet. And he showed me, like, several rifles and a number of handguns. And, yeah, when we met, he had a lot of guns. Over the course of our marriage...
You completely effed him right then and there, didn't you? When he showed you all of his guns, you immediately just said, that's it. Get your pants off right now.
Yeah, that and the giant stacks of sci-fi novels really clinched the deal.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
Dawn Taylor is working on stories today, including the following.
A teacher is accused of having sex 100 times with an underage student. A corpse is found in a home that's been sitting there for 2 months. And scholars rate the best and worst presidents ever.
Excellent. So there you go. The Rick Emerson Show today, also featuring Ryan White, music editor from The Oregonian. Top 5 worst teen idol songs. Dawn Taylor's submission for the worst song in the history of recorded humanity. Corpse Watch coming up today. Geek Watch and Pop Culture Authority, which answers the magical question, why does G.I. Joe have a scar? Now, without further ado, will you please give your attention to...
And now, from the news desk, this... is Dawn Taylor.
A former high school teacher in Freeland, Michigan, has been arraigned in 2 counties on 29 counts of sexual misconduct with an underage student. Marcy Rousseau, a 33-year-old mother of 2, is accused of having sex with then-16-year-old student from May 2009 to February, according to prosecutor Angelina Scarpelli. There could be two other alleged victims dating back to 2002, Scarpelli told Prime News. Rousseau was placed on administrative leave February 16th while police investigated the allegations. She officially resigned from her teaching job at Freeland High School on June 16th.
Was this a thing that happened when you were going to school, where there was some teacher getting it on with some student, and it was either known at the time or it came out later? Is this a recent development, or is it just the exposure of these things that is recent?
I think it's the exposure of the things that are recent. It's in a similar way, it reminds me of how when I was a kid, we were all told not to talk to strangers, don't get into cars with creepy men, that sort of thing. And I remember once this guy pulled up with when my friends and I were walking to school. We were about 9, and the guy said, "I want to ask directions. And said, where is something?" And I told him, and he said, "Wait, come over here closer to the car." And I said, "No." He said, "No, seriously, come here, closer to the car." I said, "No." And after I said, like, "No," 3 times, he just drove off. I went home. I told my mom about that night. This guy pulled up in his car and wanted me to come, like, over to his car. She goes, "Well, did you go?" And I said, "No." She said, "Good, you don't do that." That was it. She didn't call the police. It didn't become, like, a story on the local news, girl approached by predator. It was just like, "Oh, creepy guy tried to do something to you. You didn't go, right? Okay, good."
Well, you know, that's a little bit of natural selection in action there. You know what I mean?
So, like, when I was in school, when I was in junior high school, for example, we had a history teacher that all the girls knew we would get better grades on tests if you, like, leaned over his desk a lot.
Pardon me, I seem to have dropped a pencil. Let me bet over get it right now.
Yeah, I had a friend of mine actually slept with one of her teachers in high school, and he ended up getting fired after she reported it. I had a teacher my sophomore year of high school that I did some extra credit assignments with him after school, and there was a lot of sexual tension there. Nothing ever happened, and he didn't actually make any kind of an approach, but
it was in the
even
air.
Then, yeah, I was like 16 years old, and I was aware that there was the
when you
potential
say,
for that.
See, now I'm now required to ask many follow-up questions, like when I feel. When you say that there was sexual tension in the air, so is that like a body language thing, or is it a double entendre kind of thing? What manner of teacher?
I think you know what I'm talking about. He was probably about 30-ish, early 30s. I'm 16.
But I mean, he was like what did he teach?
Science.
Okay, science. What do you mean I know what you're talking about?
What
are you implying?
When you were with or near someone and it's kind of like there are these sort of awkward pauses and you can almost physically feel something in the air between you, like, you know, if one of us touched the other one right now, it would be deeply inappropriate.
By the way, that's not Don saying that to me right now. We're speaking about this situation. Let's not start that.
But yeah, I mean, we've all been in those situations.
See, and
you know what it is. And it's very strange when you are an underage girl and it's happening with an adult teacher.
See, and I don't think I do. Maybe I'm just, maybe this is because I'm daft or repellent or some combination of the two. I have zero radar for, like, knowing if some girl is hitting on me. I've never, ever, ever been able to tell. That is the thing, which is, I think maybe that's a thing that women are more finely tuned to than men. I think women can understand, well, I mean, clearly love was in the air, and you could tell that there was such a spark between us that were we to touch, our bodies would become inflamed. And meanwhile, guys are just sitting there going, I don't know what's up with that chick, man. I don't know whether to ask her to the prom or not. Is SportsCenter on? And the guys are just home totally oblivious. I think it's because, here's the thing, I think early on, guys overreact to everything and think every girl is into them, or they have a crush on every girl they see. And then after like 9 or 10,000 humiliating experiences where you learn that you have misjudged, then they just assume that it's always wrong. They assume the dial is constantly broken. So nothing ever happened with this teacher of yours,
no,
though.
But the thing is, it very well might have.
My parents
had just recently gotten divorced. My father had left. I was an unhappy, miserable kid who hated school.
Were you acting out?
Later I was acting out. But at that time, you know, and also, you know, girls are every bit as hormonal at that age as boys are. And so it's like the combination of those things was like the sort of perfect storm, you know, for inappropriate underage behavior should he had actually made any kind of move on.
Well, is that was going to be my question, actually. So is that if he had said, "So I've got this bottle of Boone's Farm in the drawer, and that door locks over there." I mean, do you think you would have gone for it?
Probably. I think over the years we've had enough conversations. I think you know that it is my nature to just kind of go, "Well, this is something I've never done before. Let's give it a try."
Note to self.
I'm sure I probably would have.
All right, then. You know. See, we know, I'm sure it must have been happening in my high school. I mean, it just seems like the law of averages is such that, that somebody was probably humping it with somebody. But the only thing like that that we had, it was known at my high school that the one of the math teachers who was, I believe, divorced, was getting it on with the football coach, who was married but then became divorced. And they were off. She lived in an apartment not too far from the school. Well, it was walking distance, but they drove. But there was somebody else. See, here's the thing. Then as now, you got to always assume that there's just somebody there lurking around a corner like Hal Holbrook, you know, sort of peering through a potted plant at you. But a student who also lived in that apartment building would go home for lunch, and there's Mrs. So-and-so, and there's Mr. So-and-so. Hey, they're going into her apartment. Hey, they're coming. Hey, her hair is all effed up. Oh, my God. And then it became a thing that happened on and on and on. And then you put that together with the fact that occasionally you'd walk by his desk. I had him. He was my – this is how dumb I was. He was the football coach, and he taught a math class. And the math class was just – it was essentially a math class only for his football players. You know, it was what they call bonehead math. But it was – he would literally do this thing of saying, now, Scott, if I've got five apples and if I give you two, how many apples are, you know, and I'm in the back just hating my life and just wanting to die. And I was just there because I was just an F up and I wouldn't go to class. But occasionally you would walk by his desk. It's not like any learning was going on. And you would catch like this very strong perfume that was the same as she seemed to be wearing. So that's the closest thing we had. I never had anything. I don't think I ever had a teacher. I never had a teacher hit on me in any way, a teacher or a priest. I was just not pretty enough. There was nothing desirable about me, apparently.
Actually, the creepiest one for me is there was a teacher when I was in junior high school. He was our music teacher, and he was in his late 20s, I think. And he was one of those guys with the big, like, porn mustache and trying to show how cool he is by, like, and I'm going to play you a little band called Led Zeppelin as part of our music appreciation. And I found out later he married a girl who had been in my class with him. It was after she was of age, but she was still only, I think, 20 or something when they got married. He had met her when he was dating her mom.
Wow.
And they had reconnected, but he had been her teacher when she was like 12.
That is like full on Bill Wyman territory.
That is so creepy.
I was going to say it's kind of hot, actually. let's move on. This is Don Taylor at the Legion of News News Desk. I'm sorry, did I say Legion of News? I'm doing that thing already. This is like when I misidentify stations at the news desk here in the Rick Emerson, the radio program.
How about we do a corpse
watch? I can't see what that is. You're holding a thing over and it's folded
it says
over.
It's corpse in huge pink letters.
Ladies and gentlemen, here is your corpse watch for whatever the hell this is. What is this, Thursday?
Yes.
Here is your corpse watch for Thursday on the Rick Emerson radio program.
I'm digging up bones, I'm digging up bones, exhuming things that's better left alone. I'm resurrecting memories of love that's dead and gone, yet tonight I'm sitting alone, digging up bones.
Here is your corpse watch for Thursday on the Rick Emerson Show.
The drab yellow house dressed in unkempt shrubs has always been a peculiarity on St. Mary's Street in Peterborough, somewhere in Canada. Perhaps it's the uncared-for nature of the home's exterior. Perhaps it's the home's two occupants, a brother and sister, who have lived in the house for as long as anyone on the street can remember, but most can only count on one hand how many times they've actually seen them.
Maybe it's the fact that their last name is Peacock, and they're always talking about the War of Northern Aggression.
For that reason, it was not unusual that 2 months had passed since anyone had seen Lawrence McGuire. What was unusual was what police discovered when they entered the home Tuesday night, following up on a call from someone concerned about Mr. McGuire, 59, and his 52-year-old sister Susan. Police came to the home shortly after 6 p.m. and discovered a foul odor permeating from a locked-up room. When officers and firefighters finally busted into the house, what they discovered was not what anyone on the South End Street would have expected: Mr. McGuire's 2-month-old corpse. "I thought I was going to be sick," one of the street's residents said of the smell that emitted from the opened front door and picked up by a brisk wind was carried down the street. As a cool June air swirled around them, officers and firefighters donned masks and shuffled in and out of the home. Eventually, plainclothes officers were on the scene as well as the coroner. Along the street, neighbors mingled on the sidewalk, watching and wondering what was happening.
Is this like written by Tom Wolfe or somebody?
As night began to fall, Ms. McGuire, the sister, came home from work, discovered a large police presence outside her home and officers wishing to speak with her. A 10 to 15 minute conversation between herself and police ended with Ms. McGuire taken away and arrested, charged with neglect of duty regarding a dead body.
And advanced nuttery, I would imagine.
After consultation with the Crown, because this is Canada after all, police have dropped charges. Police do believe that she lived in the home with the corpse for 2 months. Her brother's body was taken to Toronto for an autopsy, which is scheduled for Friday. They believe he died of natural causes 2 months ago.
Okay, first of all, we were talking about this a couple days ago, I think. I was talking about the irreconcilable differences thing in divorces when couples, you know, like Jesse James and Sandra Bullock, you know, or maybe they're not the best example because you know what goes on there. But, you know, there's been some significant amount of smoke. You suspect that there's fire, but then you read the divorce petition and it just says irreconcilable differences, which just irritates me. It annoys me to no end. And I think in Rick Emerson's America, there's going to be some substantial financial penalty for celebrity couples that don't just admit who was humping the maid. Anytime somebody under the age of the natural, what would naturally be that, your life expectancy. If your life expectancy is 77 and you're dying at 52, those are not natural causes. You know, if your heart just stops working when you're, 15, even though hearts stop working all the time, it's not natural for it to happen at 15, so it's not a natural cause. That they're putting that there to deny us interesting information, and I won't have it! So...
Well, I think it's as opposed to... Murder. Well, but, it's because if somebody, hits you in the head with a pipe, obviously that's not natural causes. But if, your heart just suddenly clogs up and stops pumping, well, that is nature at work.
I'm sorry, that was me. I was trying to turn a thing up and I turned a thing off. And so it's a 52-year-old guy and his sister, and they were living there.
Yes.
And there was... This is another one of those things where you just want to be able to pull back the curtain and ask her, what is the deal? Was there any explanation as to why she was was she not ready to say goodbye? Or was it one of those things where she was trying to get, his Social Security checks or whatever the Canadian equivalent to that is? Or, I don't know, was he, the only one that could fix the remote control or something? And she was hoping that, maybe just keeping him around would do the job? There's so much about this story that I don't know, but I demand to understand.
Apparently, they were quiet and seldom seen. Few of their neighbors had ever spoken with them. One neighbor said, "The people that live there are loners. They kept to themselves. They're rarely seen, except at night."
Okay. When they dance in the full moon, speaking to themselves in their dead mother's voice.
Here's the thing, though. She was living in that house with a dead body
right.
for 2 months. That people were like feeling
sickened
by the smell. Her
coworkers must have
said,
"Hey, Loretta smells kind of weird today."
Yes, I have never actually smelled a rotting corpse, but I've had chicken go bad, in the kitchen. And you got to imagine that a 2 month old dead body has to smell like 1,000 times worse than some 4 day old chicken breasts.
Yes, I suppose.
And then there's flies and things and. Oh, my God.
Don't look at me. It's not like I told her to stay home. I'm just, I'm just wondering about the...
And this is the thing. I'm not even outraged by, the crazy. It's the hygiene. That's what bothers me.
I'm just wondering if, where she worked and if, when she was sitting there in the cubicle sort of doing data entry all day or something, if somebody was kind of... It smells like chicken. I can't kind of put my finger on it.
It smells like something is rotting in here.
Does it smell like Henry to you, but if you've been sitting around for a while, maybe not breathing? I don't know. I can't quite nail it down. Loretta, do you? No? No. Okay, you don't smell it, huh? That's weird. We all smell it. You're sure you can't? Do you have a cold? No, because it's very strong over here. No, it's really strong over here. It's amazing. Maybe it's the vent. All right, that's your corpse watch for Thursday on the Rick Emerson radio program.
I'm digging up bones. I'm digging up bones. Alone. I'm resurrecting memories of love that's dead and gone. Yet tonight I'm sitting alone, digging up bones.
I've heard that song so many times now, and I don't think it ever occurred to me. Is he actually singing Exhumin?
Exhumin things that are better left alone.
Like that.
Yeah. That is, you can, if you go through the watches, as I did the other day when I found that backup disc, you can sort of trace the evolution of this program, counting the rings in a tree. You can follow the myriad producers we've had on the show by listening to the watches and realizing what era of the program they came from. Because, for instance, when this program was at KOTK and it was under the tutelage of one Bruce Egler, and then my producer was this guy Matt Peterson, who, as he would tell you, he's part of the common clay of the New West. He's a hick. Everything we did was country music. And then, you know, when Sarah came on board, it became more rock and more punk and whatever. And when I'm left to my own devices, it's just like bad Crystal Method knockoff. So that's it. Let's do one more here. We'll take a break. We'll welcome Ryan White, music editor for The Oregonian. This is Dawn Taylor at the news desk.
More than 1.3 million laid-off workers won't get their unemployment benefits reinstated before Congress goes on a week-long vacation for Independence Day. An additional 200,000 people who've been without a job for at least 6 months stand to lose their benefits each week unless Congress acts.
Freedom from work, Don.
For the third time in as many weeks, Republicans in the Senate successfully filibustered a bill Wednesday night that would have continued unemployment checks to people who have been laid off for long stretches.
I thought we just fixed this. Wasn't it a guy from around here? That was like 3-4 months ago, there was some filibuster and there was some dick, some douche, some load. Who was just standing down there and reading from like a corn on the cob recipe book or something to keep them from passing the bill that would have extended benefits. I swear to God, he was from the Northwest. And he was in the front page of any news, like, you know, area douchebag prevents unemployment extension. And then he finally gave in. And it got turned back on again because we all know. I mean,
Someone in the text box believes you're thinking of Obama health care.
No, I know how to use the English language, friend. It was an extension on unemployment benefits, and it was like 3.5 months ago, and there was some jagoff that was just making a name for himself by just bumping his gums and keeping the bill from passing, and then at the very last moment, he went, well, I'm only joking, and then they were able to pass it, and they got it turned back on again. And I know because every single person I know on unemployment, they were just raising a ruckus about it, and people were Twittering all about it, and it was all over the internet. So I thought that we had taken care of that, but now, again, no.
No, apparently not. The House is slated to vote on a similar measure on Thursday, which would be today, although the Senate's action renders the vote a futile gesture as Congress prepares to leave Washington for their holiday recess. A little more than 1.3 million people have already lost benefits since the last extension ran out at the end of May. Senator Majority Harry Reid said it is beyond disappointing that Republicans continue to stand almost lockstep against assistance for out-of-work Americans. The measure, however, stands a better chance of passing after a replacement is seated for Senator Robert Byrd, who died Monday. The measure fell 2 votes short of the 60 needed to advance on Wednesday night, but only because Reid, a supporter of the bill, voted nay to take a procedural step that would allow for a revote. Byrd's successor will be named by West Virginia Governor Joe Manchin, a Democrat.
Thank God that Robert Byrd wasn't from Canada. He'd just be sitting at home on a couch for 2 months voting no by default while moldering away into dust. Also, it's handy for the government, I suppose, because as I understand it, I'm not a politician nor a lawyer nor responsible or accurate about most things in any way. But my read on this is that if you are no longer able to file for unemployment, you are taken off the unemployment rolls, which means the government can then artificially decrease the number of unemployed people in the country. So, if you're not getting unemployment, you don't show up on the unemployment list, which means that they can say unemployment is down by 4% this month. Meanwhile, there's some guy at home, eating his own feet for dinner. So, Jesus.
Someone in the text box points out that unemployment is a term that refers to anyone who's been out of a job less than 6 months. If you've been out of work for longer than 6 months, the term is hobo.
Thank you. All right. You are listening to the Rick Emerson Radio Program. Thank you for joining us today. It is 503-505-6964. You can also email us, rick@rickemerson.com. We'll do this when we come back. Ryan White, music editor from The Oregonian, is going to be here. We'll do today's... goddamn, my microphone sounds fantastic. Listen to the crisp and warm timbre of my voice. Listen to the fantastic audio transduction that is happening right now.
It does sound amazing. Mine sounds a little thin. I don't know what to do about that, though.
If I were you, I would begin chain smoking Pall Malls.
Oh, all right.
That seems to be the approach. We'll do the top five worst teen idol songs of all time. Dawn Taylor's submission for the worst commercially released and commercially successful recording of all time. And we will have a Geek Watch coming up later on today, as well as some fantastic sound from the news last night. I've got a new favorite television reporter. He's just loathsome and repellent in every way. He's awesome. So that is coming up. You are listening to the Rick Emerson Radio Program right here on the Emerson News Network. Stay right there.
Why does G.I. Joe have a scar?
From the Emerson News Network, this is Pop Culture Authority.
I'm Dawn Taylor. Even though you never see them together, without Barbie, there'd be no G.I. Joe. In 1963, with early Barbie mania surging, a toy inventor named Stan Weston saw the potential in designing a similar doll for boys. He took his concept to the Hassenfeld Brothers Toy Company, which later became Hasbro. The name G.I. Joe was taken from the 1945 American war film The Story of G.I. Joe, which starred Ernie Pyle and Robert Mitchum. The action figures, thus named because Hasbro cannily figured that boys wouldn't want to play with dolls, came in three types: Rocky the Marine, Skip the Sailor, and Ace the Pilot. There was also a black G.I. Joe, which was released in 1965. The anti-war sentiment of the late 60s affected sales of G.I. Joe, but Hasbro adapted. By 1969, he was no longer a soldier or sailor or pilot or a marine. Marketed as the Adventures of G.I. Joe, the line consisted of an adventurer in either black or white, an aquanaut, and a talking astronaut. Instead of military playsets, the cars, weapons, and various war accoutrements were repacked with names like Fight for Survival, Secret Mission to Spy Island, and Mouth of Doom. But why does G.I. Joe have a scar on his cheek? Is there an exciting backstory, like, say, Joe was knifed by Charlie in the siege on Khe San? Unfortunately, it's not that romantic. While Hasbro was easily able to patent the 21 points of articulation that make up the first Joe figure, called G.I. Joe, America's Movable Fighting Man, Joe had to have a distinctive feature so that Hasbro could copyright the line itself. The human figure can't be copyrighted. So the next time you look at your beloved G.I. Joe, hopefully one with Kung Fu grip, and you admire his rakish scar, you'll know that he didn't get it defending a hapless prostitute in a Saigon brothel. It was purely a business decision. And now you know. And knowing is half the battle.
The final word on the only knowledge that matters. Pop Culture Authority from the Emerson News Network.
Good afternoon to you. It is the Rick Emerson radio program coming to you from high atop the Emerson News Network Broadcast Emporium.
I was gambling in Havana.
503-505-6964 if you would like to join us telephonically today. You can also email if you like. It's rick@rickemerson.com.
Send lawyers, guns, and money. Dad, get me out of this.
Chat box is running as well. It's at rickemerson.com. Let's see, just a couple of bits of business to get to here, and then we're going to welcome to the program Ryan White, music editor from The Oregonian. We got the top five coming up today, the top five worst teen idol recordings of all time. And Dawn Taylor also has a submission for what she believes to be the worst commercially released and commercially successful song of all time. Plus, Geek Watch, I believe, coming up, and some other things to get to. I wanted to read just a couple of things here. This one says, this is just really just apropos of nothing. I don't know whether this was extant, whether this predated our conversation yesterday, or whether this is a result of our conversation yesterday. I suspect the latter, but I cannot rule out the former. It simply says, I own clownpocalypse.com. So this is because of our conversation yesterday. We were talking about Don's fear of clowns and National Clown something or other in Mexico City, where apparently they, if I remember the story correctly, they just pop up by the thousands on roads and intersections, delighting and amusing passersby. And I would imagine leaving a stench of fear and urine in their wake. So, but I mentioned something about Clownpocalypse and how I wanted to do that next year as sort of a you must face your fears in a Nietzschean kind of way sort of a deal. So now we'll be able to do it, and we'll be able to call it Clownpocalypse because somebody is they've had the consideration to go ahead and reserve that for us. So thank you, sir, madam, as the case may be. And finally, I had something else to get through here. It's gone away. Somebody had asked our help. Somebody sent us an email in which they had inquired about the best way to organize their collection of media because it had reached just sort of like Gaussian proportions, and they were not really positive how best to keep all of their things sort of categorized and organized and easily findable. So we'll get to that in a second. They had wanted our assistance on that. Don Taylor, what news stories are looming on the horizon for the good people of Portland?
A teacher is accused of having sex 100 times with an underage student.
Well done. No, I'm sorry. Bad. No, don't do that.
A raccoon shuts down part of a state building in downtown Nashville. And scholars announce the best and worst presidents ever.
Fantabulous. That is all in the way. Let's welcome now to the Rick Emerson program from the Oregonian music editor and longtime friend of the show, Ryan White. Hello, sir. How are you today?
I'm good. It's good to see you again.
It is. You got like a great California Graham Parsons, Jackson Brown, effortless cool thing going on right now.
I'll take that.
Is this because now, if I can reveal this, presumably it's okay if I
yes, this is not a
state.
State
secret.
State secret.
You are a new father. You had a kid, a baby girl, 4 weeks ago.
4 weeks ago today.
So congratulations.
Thank you.
So really what I'm thinking is an effortless sort of, hey man, kind of vibe is really just you not sleeping or having any kind of rest or sanity at all.
Yeah, no, I realized, I think it was Sunday morning, I had to go out to Fred Meyer for something, and I looked down and like I had spit up on my shirt, and I knew it.
Awesome.
And I just stopped caring on Sunday what I looked like.
Do you get to a certain point where... Is this kind of like living next to a waterfall or something where you after a while you don't even hear it and somebody says, what's that noise? You go, I don't hear anything. Or perhaps living with a corpse if you're this woman in Canada and have it, you know, just becomes part of the decor. Does the fatigue and the crazy that comes with the kid, does it just wear off and it doesn't frazzle you after a while or you just...
You don't become frazzled, but you notice it. I notice it all the time, and you notice her all the time, like because things change. The other morning, you know, while my wife was in the shower, she for the first time learned that cry that sounds like you're changing gears, and it just and like she's got like 7 gears now.
And is it do is I apologize. I have no other way to put this because I don't have kids. But as Don will tell you, I have a dog, and I'm doing that thing now that dog owners do, and I apologize, and it's like such a dick move, but I have no other frame of reference, and I'm not comparing your newborn daughter, who I'm sure is brilliant and what to do a dog. There's just no other... But so it's this thing of like they only have the one little noise they can make initially. You know, the sort of a burbling kind of a... And then eventually there's kind of a... And then eventually there's a bark, and then there's a whine, and then there's a thing. And it has this whole, you know, this whole sort of microcosmic language. Is that the thing with the kid where it's like a self-extracting software program, and as it installs all of the various speech updates, it learns to shriek for you in different ways?
Yeah, and just when you learn, like, you think you've got all her tells and all her shows, and you know what it means. Okay, this is the diaper face. This is the stick-a-boob-in-my-face face. This is all of that. She gets a new one, and we just sit there and go, I don't know what to do.
You understand? And do you...
And the dog thing is not altogether wrong, because when my wife was probably about... She was probably about 6 or 7 months pregnant. She said, can we get a dog? And I said, I just looked at her. I said, no, I told you you can only have one thing that craps indiscriminately.
Yes. And so. See, and I chose the... I chose route B there. I went the other way. And in fact, we now have two dogs, because every now and again, you know, it's like it's my wife has this friend... And the friend has a kid, and the kid really loves my wife to death. The kid's, he's like 3 or 4, and she's like Aunt Laura, and they spend all, you know, they hang out together and, you know, whatever. And the thing is, she only sees the good side of the kid for the most part, right? In other words, because he's happy to be with her, but then by the time the end of the day rolls around and he's going to get a little cranky or just become obnoxious or whatever, like she's dropping him back at the, you know, at the house. So she doesn't really ever get, you know, to deal with, she doesn't have to deal with any of the downside of that. So, and some of you guys know what I'm talking about, where she will then come home and she'll start to say things like, well, you know, sometimes I think like it wouldn't be so. And that's when I'm like, get in the car. We are going to the Humane Society right now. You can have 5 of anything you want. I don't care if it's an ocelot. We'll bring it home right now. I will get you a bag of lemurs. It doesn't matter. It's, you know, anything. Just because this, I would be a poor parent. And I would end up as a story on my own show at some point in the future, because the kid would do something and then I would do something awful in return and then it would all go poorly. So.
Well, I mean, this was the thing yesterday. We, you know, my wife brought our daughter downtown in the afternoon, and we kind of strolled her through my office, and then we went down to the Music on Main Street to take her to her first concert, Pancake Breakfast. And then she went from there with my wife to a gathering where a bunch of women were getting together, and every step along the way, she's so good, she's so quiet. She slept through the entire thing. which meant she didn't sleep at all last
right.
night. And she's gorgeous and she's wonderful and it's the most amazing thing ever. I never would have imagined that it would be this great. But you know, whenever anybody looks at me and says, "She's just so perfect and well behaved," I say the doors open at 3 a.m.
Yeah,
I'll be up and watching whatever's on HBO.
Anytime you want to deal with it, friend, you just come on over. Yep. Well, that's like Dan Hanico from Powell's was here when he has a kid who I think Ian is 10 months old. And he was in the kitchen, and our chief of staff, Cheryl, was sort of watching him, keeping an eye. And he was the same thing. He was very, you know, he slept through the entire thing. And I forgot he was there at one point. And I like kick open the door, really loud. Where the hell is my coffee? You know, and just stomping around. And he slept through it all. But of course, that's because he's awake all night, just like an air raid siren.
Yeah. I was talking to a friend of mine yesterday who's got about a 2.5 year old. And she's reached the point where she sleeps through the night, but the smallest noise wakes her up. And this is like the exact opposite. My daughter will sleep through anything, but only for like an hour and a half.
Right, right. Do you are you already being a music lover and a music editor and so forth? Are you already planning, how do I put this, like a preemptive wall against bad music taste by lining up all kinds of things that she must listen to and love?
I would love to try that. I've got friends who insist that it won't work because the first time she goes over to somebody's house, she's going to come home and say, you know, tell me about the Wiggles.
Right.
Why don't we know the Wiggles?
Right.
But last year I was doing a story on this Yoohoo show that Chris Funk and his partner, Cian, they've got a 3-year-old daughter. They had started out at the Kennedy School where it was a kid's show all... you know, for like an hour and a half, and then the last 45 minutes was a set by, you know, somebody like the Decemberists or the Dandy Warhols or somebody like that for the parents to kind of enjoy because they can't get out anymore. And I was talking to Chris about how he handles the music thing, and we had just at that point found out that we were going to have a baby, so it was kind of like, let's get the local rock stars to help me figure out how this is going to work. And he said, you know, well, my daughter just doesn't listen to it. You know, on her iPod, she's got Black Sabbath and Pete Seeger, and then I was like, your 3-year-old has an iPod?
Your 3-year-old listens to Black Sabbath? That's fantastic.
So, you know, my hope is that works, that, you know, with all of the really, really great music coming through the house, she just won't like the other stuff. I think that's probably unreasonable to think that it'll happen that way.
Just don't do what my dad did, where he just decided to give me records he didn't want. Like, you know, so that he didn't have to buy me kids' music. So I had this collection of like Smothers Brothers albums and like Burl Ives and bad folk music. But these are yours now. You can play them all you want.
That's fantastic. Let's see. I've got this Barry Sadler box set. I'm not going to be doing anything with this right away. No. Kids love this. Just take it in your room. Just go away. Thanks so much. I appreciate that. I just live it. See, the other thing about me not having a kid is I know I would be, I just know in my heart that I would be a bad parent. And I think unlike most people who are bad parents, I recognize that and then I hew to that. So because, you know, like 85% of people who have kids probably shouldn't. They're just defective in some way. So it makes me happy that you've had a kid because you're like smart and you've got your act together and it's like you're kind of go through Lloyd Center and it's like just watching the decline and fall of Western civilization in front of you in fat pants, shoveling something from the Cajun grill into its mouth. You know what I mean? It's just bad.
I told people as we were going through the pregnancy and then, you know, friends would say, "Sir, are you scared?" I said, "Yeah, I get scared a lot, but then I remember I ride the bus." And, you know, on a day in and day out basis, you see people pulling kids that seem healthy and vital and alive onto the bus and you'd think, you know, if you'd have seen them pregnant, you would have thought, well, they'll kill the kid.
I got to tell you, when I used to take the bus to work, and I don't know what it is. I mean, you could say that it just has to do with the fact that maybe if you're riding the bus, you don't have a car, and so therefore you're in some sort of an income bracket. But I think we found out the last few years, not having the money doesn't really stop people from getting cars they can't afford. So I don't know what that's all about. It's some sort of – the bus is like this – it's like some sort of mobile – seventh circle of Dante's that just sort of travels through the world as an object lesson to the rest of us. It's like that restaurant and the restaurant at the end of the universe that is contained within a force field and sort of just exists outside of its own.
The laundromat is the same way. It will just make you feel so much better about your life, any trip to the laundromat.
It's just the most unholy port of souls, isn't it? I remember sitting there and I would take the bus home from work and I would see like some girl, and it would always just be some gum chewer breathing out of her mouth wearing a Raiders hoodie down to her ankles with a kid. And, you know, and undoubtedly like 17 more kids inside just like waiting to come out. And she's on the phone and she's squealing to some girlfriend of hers. And I told him if he doesn't pay his child support, I'm going to have the law on his ass. And I was just thinking to myself, I could pick up that kid and I could just walk off the bus with him and give him to a random person on the street, and the odds are like 89% he'd be better off.
Look at how many people keep forgetting to make sure their kids are with them on the max. That's been a rash of that. So
I don't really know that that's a forgetting. I think that might be, I think that might be Mr. Subconscious making himself. That's Mr. Id asserting himself over your physical control right there. I think. My only thing about the kid though is that I also feel like it's like if the kid just somehow became like if he just came home and with like a bunch of like Coltrane records or something, or just he became like a big Grateful Dead listener. I would just, then you have that horrible sort of thing where you have to go, well, honey, we can try again. We've still got a daughter we can aim for. I have a friend of mine who shall remain nameless who has actually said, and it's not like he just says it to me. Like, he sort of says it, especially if he's had many beers. He will just sort of say it openly, like to people he doesn't know, guys on the street. He'll just say, well, I got a son. Less said about him, the better. My daughter, though, we have big hopes for her. She's going to stay in school. She doesn't have any visible scars or sores yet. It's awesome. We are investing all of our self-worth in her. And I just think, God, for the grace of forethought, you know, go I. So
there's a family that is just going to be like chock full of drug abuse and eating disorders.
Oh God,
down
no!
The line.
It's just like a Tennessee Williams play, like come to life. I mean, it's you look at it and you just go, God, you poor bastard! What are you doing? Well, but you know, what do I know?
So. See, I think we have to get this one right because this might be this one might be it.
Is this it?
So in the middle of delivery, my wife looks at me and says, "This is the only one we're having." And every medical professional in the room broke up laughing. And I said, "You hear that a lot at this point, don't you?" And they said, "Yeah."
Now this is none of my business. I don't mean the private. Is it true that the whole thing about the delivery and then you don't remember the pain afterward? Has she said that?
No. She remembers.
Here's
the thing. We did the childbirth class, 5 weeks of 2 hours a night on Thursday nights, and they take you through in the early classes, all the stages of labor. And they explain, you know, how long it's probably going to last. And in every one of them, they're like, oh, you know, for like 3% of people, the water breaks at home. For like 3% of the people, this one goes really fast. We were the 2 and 3% in every one. It was a six-hour labor. And
what is the average? Like, how long is the typical?
You know, for first pregnancies, it's anywhere from, you know, 16, 20 hours.
Jesus,
kind of thing.
God.
Like, I've heard from some people, like we heard from one of the other couples in our birthing class, they had a 26-hour
labor. I just see that's the other thing is I think I would get halfway through it and be like it's not worth it. I just somebody take it away.
When I was a kid, I actually asked my mother once, you know, I was like what's it like having a baby? And she just got this really like sinister look on her face and looked at me and said, "It's the most pain you can experience and live."
I can't even. I mean, that's. I guess you got to give it up to you know, like every mom everywhere for doing that, especially if they have more money. Christ, my mom. I was my mom's fifth child. My mom had 4 children before me, and yet she still foolishly said, "Well, sure, why not? Okay, you know, just look. Be you know, I'll give you 2 minutes. Just be done. You know." And then, like 9 months later, you know, there I was, and she must have known. Some horrible agony was on the horizon for her.
See, things moved so fast for my wife. They actually ordered the epidural stat.
And is that the what's that? That's the drug they give you.
It's basically they go into your spinal into the spinal fluid and put a painkiller in there. But she was so far along that she didn't get the full thing. Nowadays, and I don't think she would mind me telling the story. When anybody asks her, she refers to the process as feeling like Satan was trying to turn her inside out, beginning with her hoo-ha.
And this is why I am childless.
I was just gonna say, I really am truly happy for you because, and I'm happy for you because you are happy about it. You know, and there's some people though when you see them, they go, "So having a kid?" And they go, "Yeah." And it's like you already, the eyes are just burned out flashbulbs already. It's just like the guy is just sort of seeing the rest of his life, you know, unfold in a way that he didn't quite anticipate. Okay, my final question here, and then we'll do a little news, then we'll do the top five. We'll talk about what's going on musically and so forth. Are you on paternity leave from the paper?
No. I'm going to, my wife is off until after Labor Day from OPB Radio, where she's a reporter, and then I will take some time after she goes back to work. But right now I'm back and grinding through it.
Wow, you guys are like the Portlandiest couple ever. You're working at the Oregonian, she's working at OPB Radio, and see, if I don't shave for even like an hour, I just start to look like I'm homeless or like I exude some sort of horrible odor. You apparently haven't slept for like weeks, and you just you look fantastic. So I mean, it's just I got you know. Really, we're just going to put you guys in the front of some sort of Portland magazine to attract the new business to come here. What was my question? The going to childbirth class. You know, that's the thing. Like, if you're a guy, you just see that in like movies and TV or whatever, and it's always depicted as such an emasculating experience. You know, where they've got the guy with the big, like the Jeremy Piven guy in Entourage. He's got the big like pregnancy belly on, and he's trying to broker some 9-picture deal, and meanwhile he's having to like get in touch with his chakra or something. Is it like that at all? Is it just a bunch of like rainbow tinted nonsense?
Everybody, men and women alike in the class, you could see us all kind of like looking askew at the entire process. And every time the instructor would roll in the TV, and it was great because they had this like, it was at one of the Kaiser places, they would have this like this 27-inch, high def flat panel hooked up to a VCR from 1982, and they were playing these old, movies. But every time that TV came in, you could see men and women alike, and they're kind of cringing, going, "No, this isn't going to be the video, is it?
We
don't want to see the birth video."
And was it eventually the birth video?
No, it was never quite the birth
they
video.
They never showed you a birth video?
No, they showed one that came close, and then when the kid came out, it almost looked like the kid had been CGI'd in because it just didn't look real and had this odd green glow to it. And like I was sitting
awesome.
There, like I leaned over to my wife. I go, "What did she really give birth to there? Like a troll?" And they had to cover it up.
Let's see who this might be. Hello, sir or madam, as the case may be. You're on the Rick Emerson program. How can I help ye? It's funny how something's never changed. Hello, hi, sir. Who might this be? Hello, hi. You're on the radio, speaking to thousands of people. Thanks so much. I appreciate that. All right, I'll just. I'm just going to hang that up right there. You know,
that went well.
No, it's just why should this be any different? I was telling somebody, I was telling Christy Turnquist about the other day. The funny thing about this phone system is this phone system works so much better than any. It works as good as or better than any like $50,000 phone system we have ever had at any radio station. All right, let's try this again, shall we? Hello, hi. You're on the Rick Emerson radio program. Who might this be?
Hello.
Help! Yeah, for the love of God. All right. Yes. Hi there.
How you doing?
I'm fine. How can I help you today?
Hey, quick question. I was listening to you guys on a mediocre show, and they kind of talked about you, so I signed up today, and I'm having a hell of a time getting on.
You were listening to us on the mediocre show. Oh, in the mediocre show. Where is it that you are listening, sir? In other words, what mechanism are
I'm
you
live,
using?
Live 365.com.
But are you on the computer? Are you on a cell phone? What are you doing?
Computer.
Okay. And are you on a Mac or are you on Windows?
Not a Mac. IBM.
By the way, hold on a second.
I'm completely bluffing. I don't know what I'm talking about.
I'm sorry, you're on a
are
Mac?
Are we taking tech support calls now?
Apparently.
Is this what we're doing?
Here's the thing about the phone number is what you don't realize when you put the phone number out there in the world, people can call. And then when they call, I answer, and then this conversation ensues. What happens when you listen, sir? When you hit it,
I can't even get in at 10. I'm not a member. I signed up for 365, and I got profile ID from PayPal.
No, this is. I can totally tell you why. When did you sign up?
Today.
Yeah, but like when? It is now 2:18. When did you, like what time of the day did you sign up?
Like maybe a half hour ago.
Okay, that's why. This is exactly why. The turnaround system, and we should explain this to people, this is actually not a technical difficulty. We've actually managed to iron, I had this like icy cold grip of fear around my heart for a second. We've managed to iron out most of the technical glitches. Just so people know this, and we should actually make this point more often, when you sign up, that is not an automated system that you're dealing with. There is actually a person.
Gotcha.
Woe be unto her. And she's very, very overworked and gracious and really works just for like, it's not really peanuts. It's almost like circus peanuts she works for.
Right.
She actually will manually assign you your login information. And I know that when she woke up today, there was a jillion subscriptions and she's dealing with those right now. So she is working her way through those. You will get that today. And today's show and everything will be archived. It'll all be listenable. So thank you for signing up. It means a lot to me. I appreciate the support. You will get that information today, sir. What is your name?
Okay. Chris Riley.
Chris, we thank you so much. We appreciate it.
And Cheryl says that she believes she has sent everyone their passwords for the day. So what you need to do is email her at Cheryl, Cheryl, at rickemerson.com. And she'll take care of
that. She'll hook you up. Yeah, Cheryl at rickemerson.com. If you haven't gotten your password, she'll make sure you get it, sir.
Awesome. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. There you go. Fantastic. And you mocked my ability to provide tech support, you harpy.
She says she sent it about a half an hour ago. He should have it.
Wait, he's a busy man. He's got things to do. People can't just, much as I would like them just to sit around and pine for all things Emerson related to come into their inbox, shunning all other aspects of their existence, which they really ought to.
That's what I do.
Just don't. I mean, well, see, there you go.
All the good people are obsessed with you, Rick Emerson. True.
Let's pay a visit to the news desk. This, ladies and gentlemen, is Dawn Taylor.
And now, from the news desk, this is Dawn Taylor.
A former high school teacher in Freeland, Michigan, has been arraigned in two counties on 29 counts of sexual misconduct with an underage student. Marcy Rousseau, a 33-year-old married mother of two, is accused of having sex with a then 16-year-old student. She ostensibly picked the boy up in her car and drove across county lines to have sex with him. She was arraigned Monday in Saginaw County on 21 counts of criminal sexual contact, and in Midland County on Tuesday on 8 counts of criminal sexual contact.
She drove across county lines or state lines?
County lines.
All right, I was going to say, because otherwise it just seems like you're almost not happy until you go to a federal prison.
But that's why she's being arraigned in two different counties.
All right, do we have a mugshot? Is she attractive in any way?
You are the one who gave me this story, sir. And,
this is, okay, I believe, there are actually multiple teacher sex stories today. So we've got that one, and then we've got this one as well. There's also there's a woman who has now been arrested. This just happened a while ago for having sex with a boy. I'm reading this off the way for more than 100 times. Well done. I mean, in a horrible.
That is the same woman.
It is the same. Now, this woman. I wonder if there's just a rash of teachers who are having some sort of a competition. Is this like the Jerry Lewis tote board or something, where he comes out and he says like you'll never walk alone or something. 105, and then and then he sweats and falls down. Let me get some of the news sound on this. This, by the way, the reporter who's talking about this story, this guy whose name escapes me at the moment because I don't think they put it up on the Chiron. This is my new favorite reporter. This is the same guy who yesterday we had that sound of him talking about that's a different woman altogether. There must be two of them today. This is fantastic.
This is the story that you handed me. I just read.
I'm not disputing that. I'm saying the fact, when I printed out the story that accompanies this, the facts must be so similar that I printed out a separate story because it's teacher, boy, sex 100 times.
Oh, so this, she did not have sex 100 times. You just put the wrong headline on the story you gave me.
No. I'm saying I think they both, this may be two different teachers with two different boys, but in both stories, they had sex more than 100 times. Look, just get off my back. I'm doing the best I can over here.
In the body of the story, the number 100 was not mentioned. It was merely in the headline.
Moving on.
So I'm saying.
The point here is that I've got audio from this douche reporter, and he is the guy who, in the story yesterday, where the mother took revenge on the teenage girl by pasting the photo, her picture onto a photo of a woman having relations with a dog and then went to school and stuffed it into the lockers everywhere. And the guy just sounded just like a raging dick. So we've now got him talking about the teacher sex thing. Listen to like the this is the legacy of Rush via Bill O'Reilly via Glenn Beck via Michelle Malkin via Rachel Maddow. It's this like you got to conjure up this outrage whenever you're talking about something. And some people are able to pull off the outrage well. Bill O'Reilly. Some people are able to pull off the outrage poorly. Glenn Beck. This guy is not even up to like the Glenn Beck level. Listen to how he starts this story. This is this guy talking about this teacher who had sex with a student 100 times.
When will teachers finally understand it's not okay to have sex with our students, our kids?
Isn't that the best opening to a story you've ever heard? And again, he's got like the weird, he's got like the Euro rave thing going on in the background. Like there's sort of So let me just, we'll play this whole thing here.
When will teachers finally understand it's not okay to have sex with our students, our kids? Here's another example for you. 25-year-old Kristen Sullivan accused of having a sexual relationship with a 14-year-old boy. This at a Florida middle school. She's pleaded not guilty. Now, investigators say for almost a year, these two had sex in the school computer storage room, on top of her desk, in her apartment, outside of his house, in a car. They say this woman even gave this kid gifts, money, clothes, jewelry, even changed one of his grades. That's how far we're going here. Sullivan has already fessed up to the affair, but denies having sex at the school. Oh, there's our silver lining here. Brother.
You know, see, I think we've reached some sort of like, as long as you are this high, you are allowed to ride the journalism ride point in American broadcasting. I think this guy might have just been sort of walking by the studio one day when they had an opening and they just gave him the gig. It's just astounding.
See, this is a completely different story. This was a Broward County School District teacher accused of carrying on a sexual relationship with one of her students, a 14-year-old, for close to a year. She's charged with two counts of sexual battery and one count of lewd and lascivious behavior.
Wait, that's the story that this is, or that's the
yes,
story
that's
you had?
Yes, that's the story that you just read the that you just played the sound for. Sullivan later had the boy transferred into her computer class in middle school. They would meet at various locations to have sex, according to police, including a school storage room, her home, and inside her car. The boy later told investigators he believed they had intercourse about 100 times.
He believed. Like, he wasn't keeping a record of it at home. Like, he didn't have some sort of a chart on the back of his door. Let's get the second half of the second half of this audio is really only worthwhile because they get to Ryan, you're just, I can tell you're bursting with something.
I just love that out of all of that, the fact that she might have changed a grade is what completely outraged him. Like, not jewelry, because what jewelry on a 14-year-old boy ever looks good?
I would imagine he was probably looking for something that said, the Mackinist kid in town. He leads up to, you know, and they humped it out like 100 times, and she changed a grade. And that's
she
the point
no
at which
shame.
The empire falls.
When will teachers learn that having sex with students and changing their grades is not okay?
When will teachers finally understand it's not okay to have sex with our students?
Apparently not today, by the way. That is not going to happen anytime.
Parents need to be aware that kids are calling it by the more popular slang term, butt hash.
Anyway, so here's the second half, and the second half of the story is really just a build-up to... I don't know if y'all find this as funny as I did, but they introduce, of course, the panel of experts who are going to weigh in on, you know, why are horny teenage boys having sex with willing women? You know, John McClarsky in the back. They lead to a woman who has written a book about this with just the most unimaginative title you've ever heard.
Back with us, Mark Harold, former police officer. Also joining us, former prosecutor Robin Sachs. She's also author of the book Predators and Child Molesters.
There you go. Apparently, you know, like at HarperCollins, they'd run out. The titling department was on vacation that day. Well, just stooping students. Go. Print. So, fantastic. Here's Don Taylor at the news desk.
Police say that it was an anonymous tip that led them to 17-year-old Abigail Abby Obermiller, who's been missing for nearly 3 weeks. Did we want to? Yes. She has been transported to the Norwalk Police Department after police found her hiding in the attic of her 20-year-old boyfriend, Robert Bobby Young.
So wait a minute. She's Abigail, Abby, and Robert Bobby.
Yeah.
All right. Okay.
Just so we know what their Christian names are, as
yes.
they say. It was believed that she had run off willingly, but detectives were concerned she might be in danger. She had left a note at her grandparents' home saying, "I just couldn't take any more of this drama. It's not good for me. Love you all. See you soon. Love, Abby."
By the way, I don't know if I'll have to check our Facebook page and see if her – it wasn't even the mugshot. It was like the picture they put up, the missing photo of her, where she looks as though – she looks like one of those gibbons you see at the zoo that is like mashing its face up against the glass because it thinks you're going to give it a peanut.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what – you know, she has like – her face is – it looks like it's compressed against something, or else she's just awkward looking. She looks like maybe a pretty girl – but that, like, somebody slapped her real hard and everything shifted around a little bit.
Yeah, that's one of the problems with making the goofy face into your, like, webcam on your computer
yeah.
and then putting it online is that...
Have you seen this man?
When you go missing,
yeah.
that's what
you
people
know,
see.
You know, they're trying to find you after your vacation in Aruba. It's just going to be your face shoved into the camera frame with five of your girlfriends, all of you holding Cosmos and looking drunk. So we have a little bit of audio here. This, again... just like the last guy who was asking the magical question.
When will teachers finally understand it's not okay to have sex with our students?
This is really not so much about the story as it is about the reporter. This is the poor woman's Diane Diamond. This is Nancy Grace. And this, it's like, you want to talk about a woman. You described in a famous, this is an infamous piece of writing that you, Don Taylor, did at one point. Probably the most infamous thing you have ever written, when you described filmmaker Michael Bay as being the movie-making equivalent of a sociopath. And you said that he doesn't know what real emotions or actions look like. He knows, or you know, how to make them, but he knows what they resemble or
yeah.
something.
He doesn't actually feel them himself, but he knows what they're supposed to look like, so that's what he gives you.
See also Nancy Grace, who I think knows what concern and caring kind of look like, but she just lacks the internal, she lacks the raw materials and clay inside to fashion them herself. So she just sort of, by dint of facial expression and inflection, tries to look as though this has been a nightmare that thankfully we have all been able to resolve. And it's like the most thoroughly unconvincing thing. You expect her at some point just to sort of like for like a lower mandible to come out and her to consume a baby on the air. At least I do, in my constitutionally protected opinion. This is Nancy Grace.
To Ellie Josted, our chief editorial producer, what happened?
Well, Nancy, just about...
Oh, so this is the second half. I'll start with the first one here, where I think she actually reveals that the kid has been... where she reveals that the kid has been found.
To there we go. Ellie Josted, our chief editorial producer, what happened?
Well, Nancy, just about after midnight, early this morning, police got an anonymous tip that Abby was in the upstairs of an apartment of a house on Main Street. They kicked in the door at about 3:30 a.m. They found her boyfriend, Robert Young, in the apartment. They said there was very little furniture. She had no access to television other than watching
movies on VCR. No access to television.
They found her hiding up in the attic, down in the insulation.
And so then, of course, now that this has been revealed, because I guess they've been following this for several nights.
It's very Anne Frank.
The Jewish community appreciates your commiseration. So here's the second half, though, when she tries to feign like a sort of, you know.
With me right now, a very special guest. This is Abby's father, Jim Obermiller. All I have to say is, newsflash, praise the Lord. There is a God. Abby has been found. She is safe. And now she's in a whole heap of trouble. Mr. Obermiller, I couldn't be happier. Tell me how you found out that Abby is alive.
Well, at about 4:30 this morning, my wife heard the phone, and she come down and told me that Abby had been found. And Grace, I don't think I've ever got out of bed that fast at 4:30 in the morning before in my life.
I feel like crying just hearing it, because when you were on with us last, we were...
I mean, it's just such gold. And I don't know... I don't know which is my favorite part here. I don't know whether it's where she leads it with praise the Lord, whether she says, I could not be happier. And it's just like this total like robotic lack of inflection whatsoever. It's like she's just reading off a cue card. And maybe
I like what she said. I feel like crying just hearing it.
And if they forgot to put her usual emoticon next to the teleprompter text so that she would know, or the dad who comes on, who is just speaking in this sort of ongoing asthmatic wheeze, you know what he sounds like? Let me just, if I can.
This morning, my wife heard the phone, and
he sounds like, what's it, the principal from Beavis and Butthead? Beavis and Butthead must not be allowed to come to the school. He sounds exactly like that. Let's just. Get the big finale here one more time. The big emotional outpouring from
Abby had been,
from Nancy
Abby
Grace.
Had been found, and Grace, I don't think I've ever got out of bed that fast at 4:30 in the morning before in my life. So
I feel like crying just hearing it, because when you were on with us last, we were
something. So there you go. All right. It is the Rick Emerson radio program. Thank you for joining us today. We'll roll the top five here in just 1 second. But this is a total coincidence. I had no idea this was happening. Don and I were talking about top fives, and we had put together this this idea we'd do a top five teen idols. And originally you were going to do the top five best teen idol songs, but you couldn't.
Yeah.
That was a Sisyphean task. That couldn't
and
be done.
And actually, it's not even really teen idol songs. It's more like teen pop songs.
Well, but
pop songs aimed at teens.
From teen performers, yes. Who were sort of, had the kind of flash in the pan thing going on, or the Insta-fame
more
business.
Or less.
So, but you instead did the five worst, and so I told Ryan about this. Then you told me that the Beeb is actually coming to this vicinity.
The Beeb is coming on July 14th.
Where is it? Is that to the Rose Garden?
Oh,
I
yes.
imagine.
Oh yes.
See,
it's to the Rose Garden.
That's the thing. It's always to the Rose Garden, because that's a whole like make it while you can sort of a thing. Like
oh,
you
yeah.
can't build your way up if you're that guy.
I wrote this on the blog yesterday, because to a certain segment, I assume that segment is like the post Dora the Explorer, pre maybe Drake. Set. He's a big deal. I figured I should, we should probably write about it. And so I emailed his people and I said, hey, I figure if I'm going to do this, I should at least listen to the CD. I could write it completely without ever hearing a song that he's sung, because it's not really about that. But to be fair, let's listen to the CD. So I emailed his people and said, hey, do you have a download of that record? And they just sent me an email. I said, no. not even we can send you a CD, just no. And I was like, well, okay, we've got enough, you know, we've got more than enough money at the paper still that I can expense a CD. And I was going to go on iTunes, and I thought, well, if I download a Justin Bieber record on iTunes, that To Catch a Predator guy is going to walk out of the office and start asking me, like, really awkward questions.
This man, Ryan White, claims it was for a story he was working on for a newspaper.
Exactly.
Or that iTunes will then begin to think that you are, in fact, a 14-year-old girl, and all of your suggestions will be adjusted accordingly.
A friend of mine pointed out, he goes, you buy it from iTunes, that goes on your permanent record.
Yes.
Yeah. And you don't want that. So then I was like, well, how could I go? He goes, you should go buy it in cash somewhere. I was like, but that involves face-to-face interaction. And I suppose, like, and I asked him, I said, does Borders sell porn still? Could I go get, like, a stack of porn and a Justin Bieber record? Like, when Homer went to go buy the illegal fireworks and he got, like, you know, porn and condoms and tampons.
Like 15 copies of Jugs, Justin Bieber record, also some Stay Lube. Thank you.
The best idea was one of the commenters on the blog said, what you do is you go to Fred Meyer and you buy a completely random collection of things and the Bieber CD, and when you get to the checkout, go just look at the guy and say, I am killing this treasure hunt.
I'm pledging a fraternity, sir. It's just a prank. You know, and the funny thing about Fred Meyer is they sell it at the checkout there. It's one of only two CDs that they actually sell right at the point of purchase. Like, right, there's like the Tic Tacs, the D-Cell Batteries, and the Enquirer. Justin Bieber, and then the other one is I think it was the soundtrack to Eclipse.
Now, how is the Justin Bieber CD an impulse buy? Because honestly, if you are buying the Justin Bieber, you are going there directly to buy the Justin. You aren't standing in line going, oh yeah, you know, it hadn't occurred to me until now. I'd really love to buy a Justin Bieber CD.
Now, see, this is a thing that you somehow, I don't. It's surprising you don't know this, but this is a thing that Ryan will know all too well in about 7 years. This is not an impulse buy for anybody but the kid. This is a kid who sees that and begins squalling.
But hasn't the kid already demanded that they own it by this point?
Yeah, well, kids, I think kids get way too little credit for being smart. Kids are much smarter than we think they are. But the thing is, kids are also, in my experience, they have a very fragmented attention span, and they are constantly sort of, you know, because everything they're seeing, about half of it they're seeing for the first time, and so they're like, "Hey, look over there!" And that, oh, like, oh my God, what's that? You know, everything is just a series of bright, shiny objects. So they will see something, and then they'll forget about it. But then when they see it again, suddenly, you know, then they're fixated on it. So that's like with the candy aisle. Kids know candy exists, clearly. But when they get into the aisle, suddenly it's, you know, they see the Snickers bar,
but
and
the
they
thing
begin
is,
screeching
candy
for
is
it.
A constantly renewable resource. The Justin Bieber CD, you know, if you love the Justin Bieber, you already own this.
Except
it's been out for quite a while.
I would actually argue that Justin Bieber is a constantly renewable resource.
I didn't want to say it, yeah.
He has existed previously, and he will exist again in the future by different names. And, you know, by the time the next one comes around, he will have crawled back into the mall from whence he came.
He is the Alpha and the Omega, the beginning and the end, all that has been and all that shall ever be. Also, at this point, if you're a parent, it may not be something that you say, well, you would have purchased it already. But, you know, kids are growing up in an era where physical CDs are not really the thing you buy. And if you limit your kid's internet access, or if the kid doesn't have the ability to go online and buy stuff, you may not have been put in a position where the kid sees it and begins screeching that it wants the CD. Mm. But here's the real telling thing about it, is the CD is not at adult height. The CD is down at, like, you know, waist level, which means that it's right at the eye line for like a 7-year-old. And the thing that is being stocked immediately next to it is that novella from Stephanie Meyer, the brief second life of blah 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 blah, whatever. The little cash-in Beetle the Bard thing she did, like after the Twilight series wrapped up. So let's do this call and then we'll roll the top five. Hello, sir, madam, as the case may be. How can I help you on this fine Thursday?
Hello, Rick Emerson. This is Rick the Cabbie calling.
Hello, sir. How are you today?
Wanted to say greetings from the home of the largest ball of twine in Minnesota.
I don't understand what you're saying. Are you just saying you're in Minnesota, or are you actually at a place where there is a ball of twine in Minnesota?
I am in the beautiful town of Darwin, Minnesota, home of the largest ball of twine.
Are you effing with me? There really is a largest ball of twine in Minnesota? I thought that was just like
I'm totally not messing with you.
Okay, let's just stop. Let's stop for 1 second here. There is a Weird Al Yankovic song, which I believe to be his greatest work, called "The Biggest Ball of Twine in Minnesota." Are you telling me that that song is in fact based upon a real item that exists in a real place, and that you are in said place now? Don't lie to me.
No, I'm not lying to you. I'm there right now as we speak. I have T-shirts. I will post pictures to my Facebook this evening. And let's see. According to the sign, yeah. The Francis Johnson was the name of the guy that built it. He was the son of a U.S. senator. And this place is awesome. This is truly awesome.
Don, have you done independent verification on this?
Ostensibly, yes. The ball of twine is in Darwin, Minnesota. It is 12 feet in diameter and weighs 10,400 pounds.
Fantastic. Well done, sir. All right, you've gotten photographs, you've gotten the T-shirt. Let me ask you this. What is the T-shirt of the largest ball of twine in Minnesota? What does it look like?
The T-shirt, we got two of them. There's a tie-dye one that says, that's got a picture of the ball, and it says, world's largest twine ball made by one man, Darwin, Minnesota. And then the other one that we got is, let's see. Oh, and this isn't even the focus of the awesome that you're going to experience.
How could it not be the focus of the awesome? What is it's a twine ball museum.
Oh, yeah. No, that's pretty awesome.
Well, this call is just... It's happening in reverse metric time.
But the awesomeness, the true awesomeness, is that we went down the street, down the highway a little bit to a place called Litchfield, where there exists in Litchfield a factory cheese outlet.
No, this is less interesting. You're really wrong in your estimation of the relative interest levels that I hold in all these things.
No, I'm not, because I bought something for you.
What did you buy? Wait, let me understand this. Hold on, let's just back up for a second, friend. I don't mean to sound ungrateful. Rick Emerson, Don, is Rick Emerson grateful?
Oh, you are very grateful.
Rick Emerson is grateful like an MF-er. You have no idea. But am I to understand? And keep in mind, I'm not trying to look a gift cheese in the mouth or something. But am I to understand that you went to the world's largest ball of twine in Minnesota? You opted against getting me something from the Twine Ball Museum, and instead decided that I would like a cheese-based gift.
You're going to bitch about bacon cheese?
No, I'm not. I'm just saying it's all, you know, I was wondering if maybe I've done something to indicate a falsehood about me as a person that you would choose that way. Not that I don't appreciate it. How much bacon cheese are we talking about?
We're talking about, let's see, there's about 2 pounds.
Oh, God, why did I ask?
Yeah, 2 pounds of bacon cheese. Beautiful cheddar.
All right.
And there's also the option of a coffee cup in it. If you really want to be a bitch.
All right. Let me just trying to appear as though I am not graciously accepting the 2 pounds of bacon. See, now I feel bad. Now I'm gonna have to eat it all in one sitting just to demonstrate that I like it. Let me just one final question. How far? Can you hold on just one moment?
Good God Almighty.
Okay. How far from where you are right now? Because I may never get this chance again. How far from where you are right now is the Twine Ball Museum? I can't believe these words are even leaving my mouth.
The Twine Museum is, let's see, 20 feet.
Where are you in Lilliputia? Where are you? I don't understand. Okay, let me just, can you do this? Can you please now to purchase me, and I will then pay you back, I will recompense you, or a word like that, when you return to Portland. Please now to purchase me a Twine Ball Museum T-shirt, small or medium, probably small if you got it, and then I will, I'll give you a little coin when you get back.
They are $18, and they come in pink, green, yellow, or gray.
I don't know. Would you make an executive decision? What color do I want?
Well, actually, apparently they come in many. They also have black,
black.
You could get the black.
If you could get me a black T-shirt from the Twine Ball Museum, you would be, at least for the duration of this month, the greatest person that we know.
A black small, you're saying?
Yes, and I'm sorry about the T-shirt thing and the cheese and the everything. So, yes, if you could do that, that would be fantastic.
It shall be done.
All right. You'll be posting photos of that later on, because we'll put them up on our site.
Oh, hell yeah. You know, I've got the Facebook page. We're connected. It's all just right. Rick the Cabby.
All right, and that'd be great. Okay, well, that's great. No, I'm sorry, we're losing your call. No, I'm sorry. All right, thank you. I'm sorry, I couldn't take any more. It was like he was having to create the words one letter at a time on a Scrabble board inside his head and then send them via carrier pigeon to somebody who then relayed them over the phone at half speed. I got to a point. It was like talking to a guy in Jalalabad on CNN or something.
Do you notice, though, that he said the largest ball of twine made by one person?
Yes.
As if somewhere out there there's a larger ball of twine that two people did.
Oh, it's just very
the
There
whole thing are is very
other
confusing. Giant twine balls, and so they have to be specified with the largest sisal ball twine made by one person is that one, but there's also the largest twine ball built by a community. That's in Kansas. And there's also the
it would
heaviest,
be in Kansas, of course.
The heaviest ball of twine, which is in Wisconsin.
Well, how is it that the biggest and the heaviest aren't the same thing?
Maybe they're made of different kinds of twine.
No, but see, I knew you were going to say that. But it, like, bigger twine is just rope. That's
physical girth, physical size, and weight are two different things.
Steel reinforced twine.
Seriously, it's all right. Well, we'll figure it out at some point. All right. Not that I'm not grateful that he's getting me cheese, but I'm just saying I would think over the years that I would have made my love of the twine ball known. See, now I'm morally obligated to play the song, so we'll do that to close out the show. Let's roll the top five for Thursday right here in the Rick Emerson radio program.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1, fire.
The best part is how we were using, like, trillion-dollar technology originally developed to maintain military communications after a nuclear apocalypse so I could get a guy to buy me a shirt in addition to some cheese in Minnesota. It's just how Al Gore wanted it. All right, ladies and gentlefolk, at the news desk, Dawn Taylor has your top five. These are the five worst teen idol recordings of all time. Dawn Taylor?
Number five, Go Away Little Girl, Steve Lawrence.
Steve Lawrence of Steve and Edie?
Yes.
I didn't know Steve Lawrence was a teen idol.
Well,
was he like 70 already at the? Or was it like
no,
he a
was,
teen?
He was in his late 20s. This was 1962.
All right. It's hard to imagine Steve Lawrence as a teen idol. My brain is, I'm getting a whole 404 thing there. I just can't.
The song was also recorded by Donny Osmond, but it's especially creepy when it's sung by a grown man.
But our lips must never meet. I belong to someone else, and I must be true.
He's got some weird flange thing on his voice, too, where he's doing a, it's like some strange double-tracking thing that makes it sound a little creepy.
I have a hard time imagining, like, high-pitched screams while this song is being played.
Steve Lawrence, defile me! This song was actually in the American Top 20 three times for Steve Lawrence in 1962, for a band called The Happenings in 1966, and for Donny Osmond in 1971.
And the only version I really know is the Donny Osmond version. I have all this, like, Osmond knowledge in my head for some strange reason, so that's the only version I really which he sang in Vegas when I saw him a year and a half ago. Saw Donny Marie the night before I saw Britney, and he sang that it was freaking awesome. So everybody can just suck that. Donny Osmond was fantastic. These are the five worst teen idol songs in the assessment of one Dawn Taylor.
Number four, Bobby Sherman, Julie, Do You Love Me? One thing that you'll find that the remaining songs on the list have in common is these insane production values.
This is a very sort of Circus of the Stars on CBS.
Makes me sad girl, yet brings me down.
Is he like a burlesque show?
Tossing and turning and freezing and burning and crying.
And mooning and juning and spooning. How old would he have been when this came out?
Well, this was 1970. I think he was one of the older teen idols. He was like in his early 30s, I think, when he was doing the whole Tiger Beat circuit. So I think he's probably about, I don't know, he was 30-ish.
You know what I would give anything to see? I would give anything to see the inner workings at, like, Tiger Beat magazine. What must it be like to work there? And I know that maybe the answer is not all that interesting. It might just be kind of dull. But I'd like to know that as well. I mean, and I wonder who the staff at Tiger... I would watch a documentary on that, like, now. I'd pay for that in advance. I want to know what the staff at Tiger Beat magazine is. Like, is it in fact 20-something girls, which is sort of who you picture? Is it guys? Is it the staff of some other magazine that does that on the side? Is it a bunch of, like, sort of, you know, like, oversexed housefrows? I just have no idea. Ryan White in the back.
I have no idea.
Bobby Sherman was actually 27 when he recorded this.
He's 27. What do you imagine the staff of Tiger Beat magazine is like?
I imagine them. I don't know what they are today, but back in the 70s when they were at their height, I always imagine they were a bunch of middle-aged chain-smoking women.
See, that's what I think too. Sort of a Patty and Selma sort of a thing going on there. I want to know who works at
the little girl's panties are going to really drop over this new kid. You know, and then they bring somebody like Donny Osmond in. And
that's going to end up in a deposition. Don Taylor counting down the top five worst teen idol songs of all time.
Number three, The Partridge Family, Point Me in the Direction of Albuquerque.
That's a terrible title for a song.
This also a song, as best I can figure out, it is a song about a guy who has the hops for a homeless chick.
Well, something to be said for creating a niche.
Window walking downtown, feeling mighty good. And I noticed from the corner how all alone she stood.
I don't know why, but I can actually hear Elvis singing this song.
Yeah. It's because it's bad. In disguise, lonely little it does have a little bit of that In the Ghetto kind of thing.
Yeah, that's exactly what I was thinking.
They're making me wait for the hook, aren't they?
Yeah.
Damn you, Partridge Family.
Crazy little rat dog. Her hair was wild and tall.
Crazy little rat dog?
Rag doll, I believe. So. I knew that she was lost. Keep in mind the sound of these backup singers, by the way, because these studio singers will come into play in something we'll discuss later.
Well, the nice thing, if you're the Partridge Family and you're driving around and you see a homeless girl that you like, you've got room to pick her up and give her a ride because you're on a bus.
Unfortunately, she's going to have to sit in the back with Danny, and no good can come from that.
Except that you will hear the story 500 times as he sits uncomfortably in a room with Adam Carolla. This is a song title that could only exist in the 70s, by the way. You could never pitch this. Point me in the direction, point me in the direction of Albuquerque?
Point me in the direction of Albuquerque.
I bet there's
parenthetically where I should have taken a left.
And this must have been like a bet between some songwriters, like to see like, you know, what sort of overstuffed mouthful of a song title they could manage to make into a hit. All right, we're done. That's over. These are the top five worst teen idol recordings in the assessment of Don Taylor.
Number two, New Kids on the Block, Tonight.
Oh, man. Okay, see, now you're wrong. This is where you're wrong. You're so wrong. And I know I can sense a disturbance in the force. I sense Sarah Dillon's in the kitchen. There's gonna be hell to pay when you get out of here.
This song is just psycho and weird.
I like this song
and just.
Okay, here's the thing. But I'm gonna start it over again in a second. I'm gonna say this. I like this song. I long ago dispatched with the idea of guilty pleasures. I have no guilty pleasures. Things I like, things I don't like. I no longer feel guilt about music that I enjoy, even if society thinks that I ought not like Poison or whatever. So the thing is, and I'm ahead of the curve on that too, because I liked them before his brain exploded. So the and you suspect he's working on a concept album about that right now, like at this very moment, Bret Michaels. I liked this song when it came out, and I like it now, and I am going to further blaspheme everybody by saying that it does almost remind me of the Beatles in some way via like ELO.
Oh, it very much wants you to think of the Beatles and ELO. But it's kind of terrible.
The other great thing about this song is that they do that great thing that you can do at a certain point in your career where they reference themselves. They cite their own song titles back.
Remember when we said, girl, please don't go.
Right there. That second one coming up. Everyone.
Forever.
Forever.
I mean,
it's like a clip show. It's like a clip show.
Well, then you just start thinking, I know what the song is like. I get the song. Then it changes tempo.
This is supposed to be Cheap Trick being ELO being the Beatles.
And there's the Beatle thing.
It's a great song. You are completely wrong about this.
I mean, many rails of coke have you started up?
Don't step on the hook. That is a quality hook, and there's no getting around it. It's a good song.
It's an ABBA hook.
If this was by somebody else, you would have no problem with it. If this had been by ABBA, everybody would be like, oh, it's genius. Their latter period 70s work, which I have as part of their box set at home next to my Carpenters records. Have you seen my corduroy pants? If this was an ABBA song, there'd be some dick at the Mercury writing a thing about it right now. About how it was like an overlooked gem and blah, blah. Better yet, if it was from some band you'd never heard of, that like broke up before anybody ever heard, it would be like the best thing that had ever existed.
I did have a similar conversation to this last night with my husband because he wanted me to include the Hanson's Mbop.
That's a great song.
That is
too.
A great song. So
I
we
came
had
on
to
at Home Depot
that.
When I was there a couple of weeks ago, and that's an odd thing to hear at Home Depot.
Yeah. Well, that song is, God, it's over 10 years old, isn't it?
Oh, at least.
Doesn't make
me want to buy a power saw, though.
The listeners in the chat box, by the way, are supporting me on my my dislike of this song. Yeah.
Well, I was about to say something like, if only they had a volume knob. And then I thought, not only do they have a volume knob, they actually hold my financial destiny in their hands. Don't forget, by the way, you can now give a gift subscription to The Rick Emerson Show at rickemerson.com/gift for the low, low cost of just 32 cents a day. Isn't that a giveaway, Ryan White? The more you buy, the more you save at that point.
That is... What a bargain. What a bargain for me.
Thank you. Thank you, Nancy Grace. Don't let me forget, Don, tomorrow we have another, you know, we had this announcement on Tuesday that we're nearing the 500 subscriber mark. We have another announcement tomorrow. It's not about the subscriber number, totally different announcement. Tomorrow we have another announcement about this very fine radio program, which you're able to get now again for the low, low cost. Really, for just... Really, for a fifth of what it would cost you to buy a cup of coffee in Sally Struthers' world. Now, I stand by my love of this song and the Hanson thing, by the way. I have never had a problem with Hanson. I liked them at the time. And, you know, here's the other thing that I liked the very first time I heard it, and I never get tired of, is Baby One More Time by Britney Spears. That's a goddamn good song. You go back and listen to that. And I swear to God, I thought she was a black chick until I saw her on television.
From the text box, someone says, I'm with Rick. This is a good song. Then again, I've been listening to Dio and Rainbow Records all week.
I don't understand. Is that like that Juan has sort of just beaten his brain into a senseless pulp?
Yes.
All right. Was that actually number one? Are we done?
No, that was number two. We have one more.
Is number one your worst song in the history of...
No, you told me to keep that for separate.
I think I must be playing these... Oh, okay, I see it right now. I was playing the wrong order. Okay, so this is the worst teen idol song ever recorded in the assessment of Don Taylor.
Number one, Tiffany, I Think We're Alone Now.
Yeah, I, this is where she does the whole stuttery thing at the beginning. Does she do that? I don't remember much about this.
Yeah, this is just horrible.
Has there been a real instrument played yet? Every one of these things is typed out on a computer.
That's what they say when we're together. I find her really hot, though, even now. That she's kind of trying too hard. Now, she's a lot of plastic surgery done, and every time he's here, she's all glossed up in Playboy or something. But and here's the thing. And I remember watching the Behind the Music for her, which then intersects with the New Kids on the Block Behind the Music, because her and Jonathan Knight had some like torrid ongoing affair, and then blah 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 blah.
What year would this come out?
This was 88.
Okay, that's
87.
Why
87.
Damn. That's why I want to go stand in a corner and stare at my shoes awkwardly and not talk to anybody.
Yeah, it was originally hit in 1967 for Tommy James and the Shondells.
I dig, man. That's a group that never. I mean, they were famous and everything. That's a group that didn't quite ever get their due. Tommy James and the Shondells. That's a band that deserves to be remembered a lot more fondly than they sometimes are.
Mm-hmm.
The thing about this is like it's such a good song. You can't really hate it altogether because it's like when she did I Saw Him Standing There. And the composition itself is so great, you can never totally ruin it despite her best efforts.
But the thing is, you know how the song is actually supposed to sound.
Yeah.
And you're listening, and it just sort of amplifies how awful the production values are, how thin her voice
is. It is, yeah. No, she does. Look, I can say this now because she's like 50. I was going to say, and also I was, you know, whatever, 15 when this came out. Did you say 87?
Yeah.
So I was 14 when this came out. When you're a 14-year-old boy, really, just the sight of someone working a yo-yo will turn you on. It doesn't really matter. But she does that little thing where she says, she does like the little growl, where she says like the tumble to the ground. And then, you know, and then it's like you can't get up in front of math class for like half an hour. So I will always have fond memories of that.
Oh, this is lovely.
That's awful. That sucks. Yeah, this part should have just been smothered.
See, I feel about this, though, the way that I feel about pretty much every teen pop song. I was like, well, okay, fine. Like, I can't even get all that worked up about them. They come and they go, and they're easily
Yeah, I mean, they're
ignored.
They're, you know what, they're a known, you know, they are, they're the aerosol cheese of the music world. They are enjoyable, but largely forgettable. I think that there is a bit of a generational bias, though. I think that, and not in your list as such, because you have from all eras. But I think it's that, you know, I think bubblegum that came out, I'll just put it this way. This is the only thing I'm going to say. But there is no difference to me. I'm saying for me now. There is no discernible or demonstrable difference between the New Kids on the Block and the Jackson 5. They're the same thing. I mean, it's a bunch of well scrubbed kids that get out there and they sing and they dance and they sing, you know, and they perform songs written by somebody else.
And they're being threatened and beaten by their manager.
And at home, there's a guy with a 2x4 saying, "Do it better." That's it. I mean, there's, you know, so the Jackson 5 are the Osmonds, except that the Osmonds are more talented. And the Osmonds are the New Kids on the Block, and the New Kids on the Block are the Monkees, and it's all the same thing. But it is this guy from Travis, who seemed to have vanished, but Travis, they were this Britpop band a few years ago. I guess they're probably around, but they used to perform this version of Baby One More Time in concert, and not in an ironic way. They would just sort of do, it was just very stripped down and acoustic. And the guy from Travis, whose name I forget, he said this great thing, and I wish I could remember it, but he said that, like, you know, when you see a star twinkling or whatever, you know, he's like, the twinkle is really like interference of the atmosphere. It's dust and whatever in the atmosphere. And he said that all of the stuff you attach to a song is really like the stuff that clouds the sky, and it gets in the way of seeing the light itself, which is the actual star, which is the song. And he said, you know, in other words, it's not the song's fault that it gets ruined by overexposure or it gets attached to some schmuck, you know, that they found at a mall. So I think that these are all... You're effed, Don Taylor. That's what you are. That New Kids on the Block song, though, I will stand by that. The rest are all pretty much crap, but that I'm with that one.
Well, wait till you hear the other one.
All right. So, well, let's do this. I have no idea what we're doing. Let me just... I'm going to duck into the kitchen for a second and see what Sarah Dillon and Greg Nibbler are up to. See if they mind us going just a skosh over time here.
I may have to save the worst song.
No. Not if they're fine with this. Okay. So I'm going to roll a little something here. And we'll be back in mere moments. I got to go find out if we can go long enough here to do your worst song ever. We'll probably have to save Biggest Ball of Twine from in Minnesota till tomorrow, which I don't really, you know, I'm not happy about that. But what are you going to do? We played this at the top of the show, but I think that's when I was leaning on the suck knob. So we're going to roll this right here. I'll be back in mere moments. We're here with Ryan White from the Oregonian. We still got to talk to you about what's coming up in the paper. And then Don Taylor's here as well. Stand by. The Rick Emerson Show returns momentarily. This is the Emerson News Network.
Jesus, I am overjoyed to meet you face to face. You've been getting quite a name all around the place. Healing cripples, cute trick. Raising from the dead, ooh. Oh, and now I understand you're God. Well, at least that's what you said. So you are the Christ, you're the great Jesus Christ. Prove to me that you're divine. Change my water into wine. That's all you need do, and I know it's all true. Come on, King of the Jews. Jesus, you just won't believe the hit you've made round here. You're all we talk about, the wonder of the year. If it's all a lie, still I'm sure that you can rock the cynics if you try. So you are the Christ, you're the great Jesus Christ. Prove to me that you're no fool. Walk across my swimming pool. If you do that for me, then I'll let you go free. Come on, King of the Jews. Superstar, what is it that you have got that puts you where you are? Oh, I am waiting. Yes, I'm a captive fan. I'm dying to be shown that you are not just any man. So if you are the Christ, yes, the great Jesus Christ, feed my household with his bread. You could do it on your head. Or is something gone wrong?
Why do you take so long? Come on, you king of the Jews. Hey, aren't you scared of me, Christ? Mr. Wonderful Christ. You're a joke, you're not the Lord. You are nothing but a fraud. Take him away. He's got nothing to say. Get at you, king of the... Get at you, king of the... Get at you, king of the Jews. Get out of here. You're gonna have to do better than that, boy.
It is the Rick Emerson Radio Program, and yes, I was in fact just playing a show tune from Jesus Christ Superstar just there, so everybody's just going to have to be okay with that. That is in fact Alice Cooper, and by the way, and kudos to Don Taylor who actually identified that as being Alice Cooper right there. That is, I believe it was called Jesus Christ Superstar, like, I don't know, like Redux or Revamped or Re-something or other several years ago, and I got to give it up to Alice Cooper for actually doing that after he became like a born-again crazy person, too, that he was, you know, still looking to sing the bad guy role there. Well done. All right, Ryan White, music editor from the Oregonian, is here. What is coming up in your fine paper, sir?
Oh, we have the aforementioned Justin Bieber thing. We got Blues Fest coming up this weekend down on the waterfront and online. And the thing that I got to sit down and write, and it'll be short, but I'm most excited about next week, a week from Friday, the Gourds are coming, which they come through all the time. But the guy who's on the bill with them, Ray Wiley Hubbard,
yes,
who I just love. And I saw him down in Austin for South by Southwest, and he walks into Threadgills to play just a short acoustic set, and it was just like seeing the idealized version of my older self, you know, jeans and an undershirt with a vest and a stocking cap, and his white framed like round glasses matched his beard, and he just sat there and played four of the coolest songs ever and then just left.
And I'm out. Is one of those things, and Ray Wiley Hubbard is, I actually have to credit my dad for this because I heard him a lot growing up. Is he one of those, did he look exactly like you wanted him to look?
Yes.
Oh,
yes. He looked exactly like he sounds, which, you know, as I've been thinking about it, is kind of like, you know, in the way that Sam Elliott so perfectly narrates Lebowski.
Totally.
Like, I can imagine, you know, Ray Wiley narrating every Cormac McCarthy book. I mean, it's just like everything sounds like a really dark, moonless Texas night on an empty highway, and there's danger coming.
Awesome. And that is next week. So he's opening for the Gourds, and I saw the flyer for that somewhere. I don't even know where they're playing.
It's at the Wonder Ballroom.
Okay. So, so go online and find out. Ray Wiley Hubbard, you really ought to see, as Kurt Loder would say, you really ought to see. Check that out. So... And this is all true.
Yes.
Okay. And so forth. All right, Don Taylor, before we do anything else, we should say that coming up tomorrow, we have Mr. Carl Click from K2 who's going to be joining us. And as we just wrapped up our top five worst teen idol songs, you, though, this was all sprung from this is a mighty oak that came from a small acorn of observational song punditry, which was you and your husband talking about what you believe to be the worst successful song ever.
Well, yes, I had it occurred to me one day I was driving around, I had this old truck, and all I had was an AM radio in it, and so the only station that really played music and that came in regularly was an oldies station. And one day they played this song, and as I was listening to it on the radio, it occurred to me that there was absolutely nothing redeemable about this. The song was terrible, the production values were horrible, and the kid singing it could barely sing. And I thought, wow, and considering this was a hit song, this may very well be like the worst, like top 10 song ever. And this is Heartbeat, It's a Love Beat by the DeFranco family.
I have to tell you that as much as I kind of know this song, I don't really sit around and listen to it a lot, so this would be sort of a new experience for me hearing it with fresh eyes. Yeah, no, I'm with you. I'm already sold.
Yeah.
The DeFranco family, they got a record deal. It was after the Partridge Family had just hit. The Cowsills had had something, and the Cowsills were the inspiration.
The real-life Partridge
Family. For the Partridge Family. The DeFranco family, they sent a demo tape to the editor of Tiger Beat magazine. And she arranged for Charles Laufer of Laufer Entertainment, who owns Tiger Beat, to listen to it, and he signed them to a management deal. So he turned them into stars for his own magazine, Tiger Beat. and it's terrible. They're from Canada. This kid is 13 years old when he did this song, and it's just awful.
It's really when the bad stuff happens, is when somebody has an original hit that nobody sees coming, and then everybody rushes to get something like it.
That's the thing. It is the... That's one note.
That's the best part of the song so far.
Tonight on all new Hardy Boys.
Are they going to kill the kid after this instrumental break?
And you know, that little... What is that? I always want to call it a harpsichord, but it's wrong. Whatever's that thing that's playing in the background that Lurch plays?
That is a harpsichord.
Is that a harpsichord?
Yeah.
Isn't that, and that's the same thing that's at the beginning of I Think I Love You, by the way.
You might be able to hear a little bit of this. You hear backup singers here. The record came out on Bell Records, which was the same company that produced the Partridge Family. And so you hear the exact same studio singers in the background of the so-called, you know, DeFranco family singers who were supposedly doing their own record.
The kid sounds so totally disinterested in the song he is singing, too. It's just like the most listless delivery here. This has already gone on way too long. This song's already like 5 times longer than it needs to be. Oh, God, take it up a step, too.
Pre-auto-tune.
Yeah. Well, that's the one thing...
They would have fixed him up.
That is the one thing that I actually will say when I look back at a lot of like what we would call terrible music, is that at the bare minimum... You had to be able to carry a tune because they couldn't really fix it. Have you ever heard the album that Christy McNichol and her brother Jimmy put out?
I have not.
Christy and Jimmy McNichol. And I love saying Jimmy McNichol. It's like saying Jiminy Christmas or Jimmy McCracken. Or, dude, the next time you're here, which will have to be soon, because really I can't wait that long for Christy McNichol. The next time you're here, I have this album by Christy McNichol and Jimmy McNichol, and I gotta tell you, it's got like some great actual pop songs on it, but then they're all creepy because there's this like this weird like, hey, we're brother and sister singing all these love songs to each other. It's got this whole Arrested Development, you know, Afternoon Delight, you know, Michael Maybe thing going on. So yeah, that song's awful, Don. Well done.
Thank you so much.
Now, is that a thing that had you been ruminating on that for some time?
Yeah, no, I've been thinking that was actually a few years ago that I had that epiphany. And then, you know, it's like, you know, with movies, being a film critic, people always say, you know, what's your favorite movie? And it's hard to, but if they say, what is the worst movie you ever saw?
You can come out with that right away.
Oh, yeah, I can always say, oh, yeah, Adam Sandler's Eight Crazy Nights. It's that easy. It's like, oh, yes, I remember the single most painful film experience I've ever had. And it's the same way with this song. I honestly had that moment when I was listening to it that one day where I just said, yeah, that's pretty much it.
It was sort of like the heavens. Like you had, it was like you were blinded on the road to Damascus, and you just said, oh, my God, it's all so clear to me now. All right. Ryan White, read him in print in the Oregonian online at OregonLive.com. You'll have to come back and see us again.
Anytime.
I don't know what your schedule is going to be like, but we'll have to...
Anytime.
Back to our plushly appointed Someday We'll Be Finished studio. Excellent. Tomorrow, our guest will include Carl Klick from K2, and we'll have kind of a cool announcement about something we're doing here with the show, with the station, the whole thing that's happening here. So that is on the way. I believe we got a clear out for Sarah X. Dillon and Greg Niller, who are going to be recording Fun Employment Radio later on in this very same studio that'll be posted. Don't forget, this show will be up at rickemerson.com in the archives later on today. You can get that every day there, along with every Legion of News episode, audio rarities as well. We just put the Peter Chris interview in the archives. My interview with Nikki Sixx will be put in the archives later on tonight. That'll be there, and so forth. So there you go. So thank you for joining us. The Rick Emerson Show comes to you live each and every weekday from the studios of the Emerson News Network. At the news desk is Don Taylor. Advanced technology and magic provided by Thomas Gill. Our executive producer is Bruce Agler. Our chief of staff is Cheryl Kanakoa. The Rick Emerson Show made possible by a grant from you. So thank you. My name is Rick Emerson. It is Thursday, July 1st, 2010, and that is The Frequency. Kenneth, thank you for listening. Be safe. See you all tomorrow. Bye.
Attention broadcasters in the greater Portland area. Your daily show prep is now concluded. Thanks for listening.